I'm Matthew Woods, host of Leading Out of the Woods, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
I think for a lot of us, it was sort of, how do we transition into the way we want things going? It was just more like, let's just get back to it. At least it was for me.
Welcome to the Leader of Learning podcast. This is where educators can come to find inspiration to transform education through effective leadership. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Krynas, and my research and leadership experiences have led me to understand that someone like you, regardless of your role or your title, can truly make an impact in your organization. I chat with amazing guests who epitomize what it truly means to be a leader of learning. I'm so glad you've tuned in. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back, Leader of Learning, into episode 126. You know, we're in a new year, but of course, I don't have to tell you that this school year, for those of us who are educators and working in school buildings, has been arguably the hardest that we have ever faced and ever had to deal with. And although I don't want to spend a lot of time in every single podcast episode talking about it, I do want to recognize how difficult it has been and the challenges that are faced by classroom teachers. And I've recognized that I don't know that I bring classroom teachers onto this podcast enough. And so that's why I wanted to go back to a return guest, a former colleague and good friend of mine, Kurt Bascom, who has been on the podcast before. It was way back in episode 84. And he's been throughout my career one of the best teachers that I've ever worked with and really gotten to know personally. So I really wanted to get his opinion and I value his experiences, and I'm excited for you to listen to it. So without further ado, coming right up is my interview with Kurt Bascom. Welcome back, Leader of Learning. I have on a recurring guest now, I guess, on for the second time here, a former colleague and friend, Kurt Bascom, who we've talked to before a little while back. I apologize, I don't remember the episode number, but I want to welcome Kurt back. And I probably don't do enough interviews with classroom teachers, especially classroom teachers like Kurt, who have been in education for such a long time and, you know, really knows his stuff, a veteran of the game, but interested and excited to talk to Kurt today. So welcome back. And if listeners didn't catch you on the first time, if you could just briefly introduce yourself, who you are, where you are, what you do.
Okay. I'm Kurt Bascom. I've been a teacher in the Bronx, 7th and 8th grade social studies, for coming up on 28 years. In February, it'll be 28 years. And I'm also a high school football coach. I coach at Columbus High School in the Bronx, about a mile away from where I teach, and happily married, father of two, teenage boy named Dallas, and my daughter Kylie, she's 12 in 7th grade. And that's me.
Now, again, in full transparency, Kurt and I, have been friends for a while. We worked together briefly, really, in the grand scheme of things, just about a year and a half at a school in the Bronx where Kurt still teaches, but I've moved on since, and I think I've been at, like, I don't know, three or four different districts even since then. But, like I said, I am interested in getting what I consider the unique perspective at this point of classroom teachers, and I probably don't bring classroom teachers on to the podcast enough. I tend to speak more to school leaders and even people outside of education. So I think this will be a great opportunity, especially getting into the new year and getting closer to the second half of what has arguably been perhaps one of the toughest school years in a long time, if not ever. So I guess we'll just jump right in, man. What are you seeing? What are you feeling? Like, how has this school year been so far? Has it been more difficult even than last year or the past couple of years?
Yeah. I actually did go back and listen to our podcast. I think it's number 84, by the way.
Okay.
And I bring it up because one of the things I talked about then was that, I find this in some ways a little bit easier in some ways, I was saying. And it was like, wow, boy, have I kind of changed my view on that a little bit. Initially, it was logistically, no more paper. you know, I'm pretty tech savvy, the students were. So initially it felt like we can make this work. But the last, you know, year and a half since we've been back at school last year and then into this school year, it's been a lot of challenges. You know, we're back full time. And, you know, obviously the last couple of weeks, that's become odd as well. You know, I wound up having to go hybrid the last couple of weeks of school. And it's been a challenge because the students themselves, they're different, you know, just from being home for all that time or being in this hybrid model where they were in some of the time and not in others of the time. They sort of disconnected a little bit, and that's not on them. You know, the reality is, you know, a lot of the students, at least that I work with in the Bronx, they keep their cameras off. So you didn't know if they were actually there or not, and you'd have to come up with a series of prompts and ways to kind of make sure that they were engaged. But it was really like bottom bar minimum, like just type okay, that sort of a thing. And you're not getting the looks back and the nods and the follow-up questions. And then I found a lot of the students weren't there. They just knew the time schedule and they'd log in and they'd go back to sleep or something. And I know for me, I got more frustrated than a lot of the teachers and staff that I work with. We grew frustrated with it. And, you know, at first it was that kind of dark teacher humor, like, ha ha ha, you know, they're sleeping too, sort of a thing. But the reality was it was really hard to keep them engaged. And in turn, they were less connected, so I felt less connected. And it's been a challenge.
Now, having said all that in terms of what students were doing when they were learning from home, remote, hybrid, whatever the schedule looked like, you alluded to the fact that everyone's back full-time in person this year. And I think the word you used was that students are different. Can you specify a little bit, dig a little deeper into that?
Yeah, I think for some of the students, it felt like they weren't all the way back here. You know, they hadn't built those connections. I teach seventh and eighth grade. So the last time for the seventh grade, for example, the last time they were in school, they're in fifth grade. That 2 years of development, that's a big change. You know, the kids are more mature, they're taller, you know, they sound different, you know, and that dynamic alters the way they interact with each other and in turn how they interact with me and the material. You know, so that's one of the ways that they're different. Some of them are overly enthused to be back, which is great initially, but then, you know, we have these protocols and then it becomes a challenge. Please keep your mask on, you know, please stay in your seat sort of a thing. And nobody's doing it maliciously. I you know, kids, they're not misbehaving, but they're just either they're over eager to see their friends and want it to be a social encounter more than an educational one, or they're a little bit disconnected and it's hard for them to want to participate, raise their hand. And we can't really work in groups quite the same way either. So that changes things a bit too, you know?
I'm wondering, so I just want to take what you said about essentially like how students have kind of forgotten about how to act in school when it comes to like, they just want to sort of be social and treat school. And look, I mean, we were both in school once. And I think as a student, I'll be honest, like when I was a student, I loved going to school to see my friends too, you know, and it wasn't quite as much about what I was learning as it was seeing my friends, but I was a pretty good student. I'm not going to say I wasn't. Mm-hmm. But I'm just wondering, like, is it that now since students were home and since school looked so different that they've forgotten what it really meant to be in school full time? I mean, I think that, to be honest, I think that schools haven't been able to adapt enough to the fact that students right now maybe feel like school needs to be a little different coming back. And I think educators were way too quick to jump back into what they did, you know, up to like 2 years ago. But that's just me.
I there's some validity to that. I feel like, yeah, like you said, I kind of expected, like, let's come back to 2019. You know, why wouldn't you be engaged in this lesson? Why wouldn't you be raising your hands and talking to one another? So there's a little bit of that. I think it's hard to say. I feel like I don't want to put it on the students. You know, the first instinct oftentimes would be like, oh, these kids today. But it's always sort of been like that. So I don't want to just write them off like that. But I think there is a time of readjustment. But it's also where with the teachers, we're almost walking on eggshells a little bit. Where those first couple of months, it's sort of like, well, they're going through so much and we want to talk about, you know, social and emotional learning. And we're almost afraid to get mad at them. You know, we're afraid to, so there's not a real consequence or a conversation if they're not doing something right. Or there's a frustration level where it's like, oh, you know, and I felt myself do it for the first time in a long time. I kids know they don't like me getting upset. I feel like I get upset quicker, you know, and that's not necessarily all on them. That's part on me, but it's also part on, like you said, I think we kind of jumped back into it. And I think for a lot of us, it was sort of, how do we transition into the way we want things going? It was just more like, let's just get back to it. At least it was for me.
Something you said really jumped out at me. And actually it was almost what you didn't say, because I think what you did say was something about how, yes, we need to recognize that, social emotional learning is important, but we also need to like set boundaries and still understand that it's okay to get frustrated or even angry at students when they're not giving us what we should. And I guess what I kind of reading between the lines, what I took from that was, maybe right now it's been a little bit more about balancing than ever before, and recognizing that school and life in general has just looked so crazy and chaotic for a couple years. And I hesitate to say it, but I guess for lack of a better term, traumatic in some regards. And traumatic means different things to different people. I'm fortunate that no one in my family has actually gotten COVID, and we haven't really lost any close family or friends from it. But I know plenty of people who have gotten it and have lost people, and that's affected our students, and that's affected our colleagues, everybody. Yeah. So maybe that balance is what we're struggling with, what we haven't been able to figure out yet. I mean, for me, earlier this year as an assistant principal, I was definitely struggling with that because I didn't, you're talking about being back in school for the first few weeks in September after schools looked so different for 2 years. And yeah, I mean, I didn't want to be so quick to recommend suspensions for students, but at the end of the day, in the months of September and October, or at least late in September and then October, I mean, we just had to. Kids just really weren't doing the right thing. So
yeah, I'm not seeing, and VNA is kind of a special sort of a place in that we don't have the same large scale issues that they might have had in other schools or might still have in other schools. But I do see sort of almost an apathy sometimes from both sides, from teachers as well as students, where it's sort of like, oh, why do I have to do this? And in a way, it's an extension of like the emoji world we live in, where kids will kind of express their displeasure or joy with a picture, and they're not really expressing themselves, they're not elaborating. And it's kind of like in the academic world, we want to see them write and elaborate and express their viewpoints and justify their reasoning in writing. But in the real world in communicating, we need that too. And sometimes it's sort of almost like you get an emoji reaction from students sometimes, not all of them, and it is changing, but for a while it'd be like, all right, guys, I need you to take out your binder. We're not going to use the laptops right now. And they'd be like, well, wait, why? Why is there that reaction? And then for me as an old man sort of in the classroom, it's sort of like the frustration kind of comes out of my face sometimes. I don't have the best poker face. And sometimes it's sort of like the kid senses me being irritated. So then they recoil a little bit. And now we have this weird tension. And part of that's on me. Like I'll be honest, Dan, part of talking to you about this is the challenges I face is really therapeutic to me. It kind of helps me iron out issues. And I know this school year, it's been a challenge for a lot of us. And on the surface, I'll try and be positive in things with my staff, my colleagues, and with the students. But sometimes it's like, wow, I don't know. And the first want is to say, oh, these kids. It's like, but it's not just them. It's I haven't adjusted the way that I need to. I have to find a way to be more patient and yet firm and be okay with the fact that, yes, I'm going to be mad at you. I'm going to say it. And it's all right. You'll get past it. I had an interesting conversation with a student about a month ago. And the student was kind of one of these emoji students. When something was bothering them, they would just be the eye roll. They'd be, for something subtle, it'd be like, all right, there's three questions. Oh, I'm like, there's two questions. It doesn't matter how many questions. And then I'm feeling mad. But I spoke to the person outside my room and I said, it's really frustrating for me. I don't understand. I'm asking you to do something. And there's always kind of an eye roll. And I need you to handle that better because you're not, and I was very firm and direct with him. I brought him outside. I didn't want to admonish him in front of everybody, but I had sort of a breakthrough with that student, the next several weeks, I just saw a change of it. Like, maybe he's right. And it was like, for me, I gotta be honest with them. I got to be direct with them. I don't want to be confrontational with them. That's never really been my way. When I do that on occasion, it's really effective. I got a mean face and, I got a loud voice, but I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to become the ogre. And I felt myself becoming that but as a group. But then what I'm trying to do to fix these things is still trying to find a way to build those relationships, you know, having those one-on-one conversations. I've kind of restarted doing the live streaming again. And again, it's just yet another way to reach out to them. And it's early, it's only been a few weeks, but it's starting to reap some dividends already.
You know, when you said a couple of minutes ago that it's been kind of a struggle for you, and that maybe one of the realizations for you coming into this year and sort of struggling through the beginning part is that it's not always just about them, like, oh, it's the kids. And it's interesting to hear you say that for a couple reasons. One, and I think I said this in episode 84 or whatever the last time that you were here, you've definitely always struck me as the one of the teachers, arguably the one of the best that I've worked with at connecting with students and building those relationships. And I appreciate the vulnerability for you to kind of share that it's been tougher this year, but it sounds like you've reflected on that and you've tried some things. And I'm wondering if you might kind of talk me and us, the listeners, through, like, you mentioned a couple of things I think that you did, right? Trying to talk to students more one-on-one, building better relationships with them, live streaming, talk about that a little bit. Like, what are maybe some things that we're working on to try and reconnect or connect better with these students who are, quote unquote, a little bit different this year than the students that we've encountered in years past?
I think one of the things that I've done is I've actually used my own children, you know, Dallas and Kyrie, and that they're in the age bracket where I teach now, and hearing how they speak of their teachers and they speak of the school experience, that's been helpful to me, you know. Asking them, when I talk to you about, you know, schoolwork, does it bother you? When I ask if you're okay all the time, so I'm getting, like, firsthand primary source information from kids right in that circle, that age circle. And then I'm trying to apply that in my classroom. I think that's one of the things that's really helped.
What kind of stuff have you learned from your own kids then? Like, how much is too much to kind of invade, I guess, when it comes to getting to know them on a personal level?
Well, it's funny in that my kids, they tell me everything. I've kind of built a good relationship with them where they're pretty open with me. But Kylie in particular, my daughter, sometimes, you know, I'll be like, are you okay? She's got a face like me. She's very beautiful, but she's got this kind of serious face at times, and she'll look like something's on her mind. And it came to where, like, you know, Dad, I'm fine. You know, why are you asking? And it was sort of like, all right, so then you learn to kind of temper how you're coming at the kids. And then I've also found where, you know, again, with Kylie, you know, how's school? Good. You doing anything today? No. You talk to anybody? No. And when I start getting those monosyllabic answers, it's like, all right, I'll mention it to her. Hey, so we're just going to talk in single syllables today? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. So taking that idea and bringing that into my classroom, when I'm not getting stuff from them, you know, when I'm getting single word answers, yes, no, you know, or just the minimum, it's like, all right, wait a minute. Let me change the way that I'm questioning them. Let me change. And let me speak to them about it. Like, guys, it's going to be kind of slow today if it's just going to be, you know, one word answers like this. If it's going to be four students in a class of 25 talking, you know, and that really helps open it up a little bit. So that's one of the things I learned from my kids, just kind of talking to them about it. And then with my son, it's still about, you know, he's an ace at school. He does really well. He's always principal's list and things like that. But he'll tell me, I find this boring. They're giving us a slideshow. We look at the slideshow. We answer the questions based on what's on the slideshow. I don't want to do that. You know, so if he's an ace student and he's feeling that way, then students that aren't aces are probably going to feel something similar to it. There are just a couple of those.
I think, yeah, I mean, I think that's great. I think, you know, one of the things that I got out of what you said is basically how to tap into and try and inspire and motivate kids now when it's been a little bit different. In, you know, it has to be a little different now than it used to be. I'm curious, have you experienced the same thing on the football field with the football players? Has the motivation been different? And in terms of their, competitiveness, their sportsmanship, and are you seeing any noticeable differences there?
Football's kind of different in that kids choose to be there. They're there because they want to be there. And at Columbus, these are kids that are hungry. You know, when I got there back in 2019, the team hadn't won in years, literally. They hadn't won a game in years. And when they were playing, they were losing 40 and 50 to nothing. When I came on in 2019, you know, we brought some structure and some organization and very clear expectation. And we turned that season around. We went 5-4. We made the playoffs. And then they had that year off. And we couldn't, you know, practice. We couldn't play. We didn't have a – they had the school had to choose between lacrosse and football, and they chose lacrosse because the head coach of the football program is also the head coach of the lacrosse team. So, and they hadn't played lacrosse, so they couldn't do that. So the kids were hungry to play. They were more eager to play. And then a lot of them spent this time away. Once they could go in gyms to work out, they did. And because they're younger and less, you know, forward-thinking as far as protocols and safety, they were playing independently on their own. And maybe they weren't wearing the mask the right way, but by the time they came back, they had advanced quite a bit. So that really, it wasn't an issue as far as motivation for most of the kids. If a couple kids came in out of shape because they've been sitting at home and just eating potato chips while they're on online classes, that was a bit of an issue initially in August. But I felt that the team really kind of grew very close. When we got the announcement about NYC having a vaccine mandate for student athletes, that became a big deal. There were several students that had conversations with the parents, and the parents were like, no, you're not getting vaccinated, you know? And I was like, wow, you know, I had been vaccinated, my kids had been vaccinated, but you can't, the idea of making someone do it becomes this major issue. And ultimately, all the kids ultimately, except for one, did get vaccinated.
So it didn't really impact the team too much then?
No, but if anything, it was this idea that, look what I'm doing to be here. You know, my family doesn't want me to do this, but I'm having that confrontation with them to do this. So we went 6-1 this season and made the playoffs, and, you know, like, we did even better. So I feel like for those kids, it was an outlet that they weren't getting from school otherwise. And they had this increased sense of pride, unlike teams I've coached before.
Now, I don't know if you would know this for sure, because I know that you don't teach at the school whose football team you help coach. Do you think, or have you seen any indications of the fact that student athletes or students who jumped right back into extracurriculars were at more of an advantage in terms of readjusting back to school and academic life?
That's a good question. That's a good point. Yeah, I think they were. They got to know each other, you know, in July and August, and when they came in September. There's four different schools within Columbus campus, so they didn't necessarily see each other every day, but the kids that they did see, they had this familiarity, especially the underclassmen. We had one squad. It wasn't just a varsity and JV and freshman team. It was just one squad. So the older kids could help along with the newer kids. They knew each other. There's a familiarity there. There was a sense of pride. We had them, like, personalize their jerseys and order their own jerseys and buy their jerseys. So there was this point of pride in it. And then as we started doing well, more and more kids wanted to join. So they did have a leg up because of the sport. Yes.
Yeah. I think that's kind of fascinating. I sort of just thought about that as you were discussing, you know, how COVID and how the different protocols impacted the athletes. And it's actually a conversation I just had with, I don't know if you follow him on social media at all, a guy named Principal L, really popular, well-known education leader. And we were talking a little bit too about extracurriculars. And, you know, I know you were a student athlete. I played a little bit of sports going through school, but mostly I was into music. And I just know how much it helped me. It helped guide me as a student. And I'm just thinking now that potentially if students had that either through COVID or were able to jump right back into it after, because we're still going through it, but like getting back into this more quote unquote normal school year, that, you know, probably it would have helped tremendously.
Well, I know that at VNA, at my school, we did restart the after-school program. Directions for Our Youth did start up the basketball program for boys' team and a girls' team. And I saw a marked difference in the kids that made the team. Like, they wanted to continue playing, so they had to maintain a certain level of average in each of their classes. And to me, extracurricular really tremendously helps students, and even my own kids. You know, Kylie plays travel softball. And for a time, she was a little bit all over the place. It was like, well, if you want to do softball, then we have to get these grades right. So she understood the connection there. And one, improve so that she could continue playing softball, and then she could work on the craft of it, and she's getting better at it. And my son, even more so, you know, he wasn't sure if he wanted to play football or not. He had never played organized football before. And in being a part of that, it made him connected to the school community. And in turn, he felt more inclined to, you know, go to extra classes to get to know the teachers a little bit. And they knew him and he knew them. And yeah, I'm a big proponent of extracurricular activities, sports or non-sports, you know. So I think that's one of the ways that we can help these kids, you know, get to that next step as we get into 2022. You know,
I also want to point out, sorry to cut you off. I also want to point out, because I think educators tend to forget a little bit about this as well. Just to piggyback off of what you were saying, I think activities, whether they be physically in the school or not, but are extracurriculars, can help students tremendously. I really think they could help educators tremendously as well. You know, you're a coach. I've spent time, albeit just a few years, but I've spent time as a middle school baseball coach, and it's just it. Those activities, right, as the kids say, they hit differently. You get to see kids, students differently than you would in the classroom. Sometimes you get to interact with kids who are not your students in the classroom, and you learn, you get to know so many more students. It opens up our world as educators too. And I think if educators, I guess my advice is that if educators actually have opportunities, whether it's through coaching athletics or whether it's, you know, running a club or leading an activity in the school. Now, my school that I'm at currently, basically extracurriculars are a matter of funding each year, and they tend not to start until later in the school year. We don't really have modified sports or anything, so it's a little tough. But if there are opportunities for that, not only do we, Kurt and I, think that they would be helpful and really inspiring and impactful on students, but I think educators as well. So I just didn't want to forget that.
No, it's a great point, because I think sometimes, because of the challenges of the job, teachers, once it hits 2:30, like, I'm out of here. I got to decompress. And I understand that. I relate to it. But I know for me that from September until mid-November, running to football every day, it was sort of like, all right, I don't have to worry about that. This is an escape from that. And yeah, you get to know the kids on a different level. It's fighting not just the student empathy, all of this, but yeah, that teacher apathy, that staff empathy, not even apathy, but this sort of frustration. And I do think finding different ways to reach out to the kids, even at your own expense, not necessarily getting paid for it, you know, can help us with this. But it's sort of, I don't fault anyone for not doing it. And I got to admit, at this point in my life, home to my kids, sometimes too, and I just want to put my feet up, or I want to go to the gym, or, but if we all of us try to find some other way to reach out to the kids beyond the 8 o'clock to 2:30 time period, it can really reap dividends.
I'll give you an example too. I had this conversation with a group of educators that I belong to that are, it's more about school leadership and administration. And there was another new administrator who was kind of struggling with the fact that they were only really getting to know the kids who needed the most discipline, right? The roughest kids, the quote unquote heavy hitters in the school. And my suggestion related to my own experience of supervising the cafeteria, I had such a love-hate relationship with lunch duty. Let me tell you, it was like the most, it was probably the most stressful 45 to 50 minutes of my day every single day when I was doing it. But also I knew that it could have the potential for allowing me to get to know other kids, right? I'm not in my office. I'm not suspending kids. I mean, yes, there was a lot of supervision involved and making sure that the kids were doing the right thing. But if I were able to get around and get to a few of the tables and, hey, how's it going? Hey, what are you learning? Who are the teachers? Who are you really? It's just that was my recommendation to this this new administrator, because I thought that was the way that I could get to know students the best. Because, I mean, sometimes at any level, classroom teacher, you get to know the kids who maybe raise their hand the most. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I'm just saying it tends to happen. As administrators, you get to know the kids who are being sent to you the most and need the most attention when it comes to discipline and behaviors. But there are other ways, like we already said, through extracurriculars or even just take a trip down to the lunchroom and see what's going on and, you know, hang out with the kids. I know, again, like you said, educators, they get frustrated. They're like, the last thing I want to do right now is see more kids, spend more time with the with the kids. But sometimes that's all it takes, honestly.
But it sometimes it feels like you're shouting into a tornado, you know, because there's all this craziness out there. And both sides' point of views are valid. You know, yes, we need to help the kids and be there. But I need my sense of personal mental health. And sometimes it's the feeling that administrators aren't paying full attention to that, you know, and when they do come through with something, and I don't want to be specific to any person or anything, I like where I work, you know, but sometimes like, oh, I have a solution, we'll do this. And it's sort of like, it doesn't feel genuine when you're telling me to do it, you know, and it doesn't feel authentic when it's something that you found on howtofixaschool.com, you know, it feels like, I have a thing, let me do that thing that works, you know?
I love that you say that because, again, I was just having this conversation with Principal L. Like, people, I think school leaders sometimes forget, or they don't forget, but they think that leadership and change and implementing new initiatives is, like you said, kind of, I guess, top down, right? And it's not enough about pulling in all the stakeholders, all the experts at each level, right? Get teacher input, get student input. I mean, I think even as low as elementary, and I know you've spent some time as an elementary educator. I haven't really done a whole lot of work in elementary, but you know, some of them are pretty smart, pretty wise beyond their years too. They could help out, but just getting that insight and that leadership from really all avenues of those stakeholders. So,
I don't know how to do that sometimes. I feel like there are some teachers that we're eager and we want to do things in a certain way. And I think sometimes it almost becomes a repellent to the teachers that are dealing with their own issues in their own ways. Almost like, oh, shut up. All right, I got it. All right, you know. And when an administrator catches hold of that positivity, sometimes the pat on the back becomes a push on the back. And it's sort of like, yeah, now you're making me not want to do that as much. And it's kind of like there's a parallel to the way students are. Students are like using the technology. You know, they like using computers and social media and these things. But now we're now, hey, great. Now you can use it like this. And now it feels like less genuine. It feels more obligatory. And you lose the sense of joy and thus the sense of want to do it independently. And that challenges teachers and it challenges students. And it's sort of like, I don't know how you fix it. You know, I know the best I can do is what I can control. You know, and what I'm trying to do better again is just reaching out to these kids, whether it's texting their parents just to let them know something positive, or talking to the kid from in after school, or making up a goofy nickname, or doing this live stream thing, or, you know, trying to use media that appeals to them, you know, whatever it's going to take. And sometimes it's going to work and sometimes it's not going to work, but trust your process. If you have confidence in what you're doing and you have kind of experience in it working, you know, and just know that we can get through this tough time. Don't just be like, oh, all hope is lost. That's the worst thing we could do right now.
You know, it's funny because you said you don't know how to fix things, but I think so much of what you're doing, what you're trying is the right answer in the sense that I know that I need to right now shift my thinking, shift my focus to doing what I need to do to build those relationships and really connect with kids on a different level than I've ever had to before. So when you say that you're trying things, whether they work or whether they don't, whether they work sometimes, but maybe not all the time, I honestly think that that's the best thing we can be doing right now is, you know, we're still trying to figure this out. I mean, and listen, I mean, I think educators were always doing that, but it's been emphasized even more. And it's like, look, we got to try our best. And that's probably not throwing new initiatives out. You know, like we were just saying that administrators come in and they say, here, you got to do this. Or the pat on the back becomes the push. I like that. How you said that. So, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think you're, trying some things, and I'm sure it's there have been times where it's been frustrating, but I'm sure that there have been times where it's been really rewarding as well. And yeah. You know, we are going to wrap up here, but I'm just I guess I'm wondering if there's anything else you haven't given us yet that you might hope for, wish for, advise educators to do, maybe as we do head toward really the second half of this crazy school year.
Focus on the positive. It's really easy, and part of the reason I'm the most popular teacher in the world among other teachers is that I'm aware of what teachers do. We're really good at complaining. We're really good at whining and, oh, this kid and that class and that principal and that. Focus on the positive. Try to, like, as best you can. And if that means kind of stepping away from those more common voices, if it means like, oh, I have lunch with these people every day, though, you know what, maybe take a day off from that, you know? And that's a hard choice because, you know, you're building relationships with people, and these are your work friends, even if they aren't necessarily your lifetime friends. Sometimes they become that. But find that positivity and find that kid. I follow Danny Steele on Twitter, and he just brought up this thing that, you know, find something you like in each kid, you know? And sometimes that's hard. Sometimes this kid, oh, he's just incorrigible. I can't deal with her. I can't. If you can get through to that kid, everyone else past them is going to be easier too, you know? And it's sort of like a grassroots idea of like, let me not just get the obvious ones. Anyone can teach the A student. Anyone can teach the kid that puts the apple on the desk, so to speak. Can you get through to the kid who's a little more challenging? If we can do that a little bit more consistently, I'm always going to have hope. When I stop having hope, it's going to be time to retire, you know? But I think that can help us. I think that can help us get into the second half of the year. It's going to be a tough couple months, you know, with COVID and with you know, all the changing protocols and the confusion. But I'm hoping, you know, that when spring comes, it doesn't just warm up, you know, literally, but that the classrooms become a warmer place too.
Yeah, likewise. I hope for the same thing. And I did just want to throw out sort of a recommendation to you or anyone listening. You mentioned something about really tapping into and staying positive with those kids who test you the most. Someone I follow a lot, I've had him, he's a former guest on the podcast, and I listen to his podcast, is Brian Mendler. Does a great job. And one of the things he always says is basically, and I might botch this, but something about how, you know, to reach the kids that no one else can reach, you have to do things that no one else has been willing to do, basically. So if you're listening and you're still struggling with student behaviors or classroom management, or, you know, whether it's just connecting with students differently now than you had to before, or maybe you're new to the profession and you're just not used to doing it yet. Yeah. He has some really great words of wisdom and inspirational stuff that will really make you think about how to stay positive and how to stay positive with those kids who, let's be honest, it's very hard to stay positive with. But like I said, we are gonna wrap up. Kurt, I thank you for your time.
I want to give a quick shout out to my teams, both the 7th and 8th grade teams. The 7th grade team in particular was kind of reconstituted this year in a lot of ways. And they have found myriad of ways of trying to be more positive and uplifting, to where it used to be like, oh, this teacher is so-and-so, they're grumpy, or this teacher is so-and-so. And there's just a general more positive spirit, in particular with my 7th grade team. No disparaging the people that were there. Those were good people too. But I guess found like the 7th grade team in particular this year has just kind of really been a breath of fresh air and trying to be resilient over these challenges. More than me. They kind of keep me going. You know, so.
Yeah, that's good. Well, that's important too. Find yourself sort of that support network, that professional learning network, even at your own schools or in your own area, because we need each other now more than ever, I think, right? Not to sound too cheesy, but listen, thank you so much for your time and for coming back on. And, you know, we don't get to see or speak to each other as often as I think we would like, but it's kind of cool to catch up like this. And I really did love hearing about your experiences and your just your the angle at which you come from all this stuff with a veteran educator who's still in the classroom, still loving what they're doing, still trying to find new ways all the time to get to kids and to innovate when it comes to both instructing and just relating to kids. So thanks so much, and, you know, happy holidays, happy new year, all that stuff.
Same to you, man. Thanks for everything.
Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you enjoy the content shared on the show, please recommend this podcast to other educators, leaders, friends, or anyone you think would love listening and learning. I would also appreciate it if you would leave a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or whatever podcast app you use to listen. For more information about me or this show, head over to leaderoflearning.com. While you're there, you can also find the Leader of Learning blog, how to connect on social media such as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Voxer, sign up for our newsletter, and even find out how to purchase Leader of Learning merchandise. Thanks again, and remember, no matter who you are or where you are, you too can be a leader of learning.